So that's a little bit about the benefits of bodhicitta and the causes for bodhicitta. Now, how to develop it, okay, the actual method. There's two methods that are taught in the scriptures, okay? One method is called the seven-point instruction of cause and effect, and the second method is called equalizing and exchanging self and others, okay? So the seven points of cause, and both of these methods, I should say, have as their foundation practice equanimity. Okay. The idea being that before we can really cultivate love and compassion, we have to be able to get rid of the very gross emotions that block these positive emotions. And those gross emotions are, you know, clinging to other people with attachment, yeah, having hostility towards them and anger, or being apathetic. So, you know, the equanimity meditation comes before either of these two methods. Yeah. So let's look a little bit at equanimity, okay? Are you ready to do a little meditation? Okay. So we'll do a little meditation to just explore about our feelings towards others and see if we have, you know, what lies behind our partiality. So I want you to think of three specific people in front of you. One is somebody for whom you have a lot of attachment. You really love that person, want to be with them. Think of a particular person. Okay, then think of somebody that you have a lot of hostility towards. Maybe you feel threatened by them or they harmed you in some way. And the third is somebody for whom you feel apathetic. Maybe a stranger of some sort. Okay, now go back to the person that you're very attached to and just ask yourself, why am I so attached to them? And listen to what your mind says. So don't judge. Don't try and come up with a right answer. Just investigate. Why am I so attached to that person? Okay, then think of the person that you have hostility towards, and why am I hostile towards that person? Again, just listen to what your mind responds. And then think of somebody that you're feeling apathetic towards. And again, ask yourself why this feeling of apathy. Okay, open your eyes. So, what did your mind come up with? Why are you attached to the people you're attached to? For example, what?
They love me, they support me, they are interested in me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the people that you feel hostile towards?
They don't like me. They don't listen to me. They
And the people that you feel apathetic towards?
They don't notice me.
They don't notice
me. Does there seem to be some guiding principle here for how we discriminate friends, enemies, and strangers? Is there some guiding principle? You know, it's funny, isn't it? Because when we look at people, you know, the people who are our friends, it seems like from their own side, you know, unrelated to us, that they're wonderful people, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Is it really that they're unrelated to us? Unrelated to usly wonderful? No. It's because they do things for us that they become wonderful. Isn't it? The person who's obnoxious, you know, our ordinary view, it looks like inside them, you know, I'm just this neutral person coming by and this guy's obnoxious. Is that the way it is? No. You know, we give them the label obnoxious because they don't treat us right and they don't agree with our ideas and they get in our way. Mm-hmm. And the people that we are apathetic towards, again, why? Is it that they're inherently uninteresting? No, it's because they don't affect us one way or another. They don't notice us. They don't give us this or that. You know? So we go through our life and we think that we're seeing everybody objectively. You know? And we think that our emotions towards everybody are valid. You know? You know, like they're the only possible emotions that we can have towards this person because this is who this person is. So how I feel is right and it's justified. It's the only possible way I can feel. You know, but then are we happy? You know, we're not happy with our emotions, are we? And so when we do this kind of reflection, we begin to see that our mind is what makes somebody into a friend or an enemy or a stranger. It's not how they are from their side. It's our mind and what we make them into. We make them into somebody desirable because they're fulfilling the first qualification of a desirable person, which is they think I'm wonderful. I mean, do you think anybody who's is wonderful who can't stand you? Of course not. Anybody who can't stand us is a jerk. Aren't they? You know? We don't think of somebody who can't stand us and say, oh, that person's, you know, so attractive and so wonderful, you know? Unless you were in love with them 5 minutes ago and they just broke up with you. You know, that's the only time that happens. Okay? But we only think people are wonderful because they pay attention to us and they, you know, they give our ego all it wants. You know? And then when they stop giving our ego what it wants, we stop finding them so attractive, don't we? You know? Take him into the used husband shop and get a new one. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we're very fickle in our feelings towards other people. Yeah. And we don't even notice it. We don't see how biased we are and how unrealistic our emotions are. I mean, why should... You know, of course it's necessary to act differently towards different people. I'm not saying that we act the same way towards everybody. So equanimity doesn't mean you treat everybody the same. Because clearly you treat a two-year-old differently than you treat an adult. And clearly, you know, you treat your child differently than you treat, you know, your parent or the school teacher at your child. So you treat people differently according to the roles that we're in society. Okay, and according to what that person needs. We don't treat everybody the same. But in terms of our gut feeling about people, yeah, is there any valid reason for, you know, having this sticky mind of attachment towards some and this mind of aversion and hostility towards others and then total indifference and lack of care towards the third group? You know, is there any, you know, good reason that can support why we have those feelings besides the reason of I'm the center of the universe? Now, which is our present reason why we feel this way towards others. Because if we look, you know, we look at people, everybody has some good qualities, everybody has some faults, right? Everybody's equal in that way. Okay? If you look at it, right? Everybody has some good qualities. Everybody, you know, can be in a bad mood at some time or another. Everybody's really equal in that way. Okay? Now, if somebody shows their bad moods to us, then we say that guy's a jerk and we feel hostile. But if they show their bad moods to somebody else and they show their good moods to us, we say, I love you, you're wonderful. Don't we? You know? And if they're not showing either mood to us, we say, nah, who cares? You know, you're just somebody walking down the street. Okay? So we react totally on what they show to us, not what they have. Okay? Because everybody has some attachment or some anger, but they, you know, it just depends on whether they show it to us or not. And what they show to other people. If somebody shows their anger to us, they become an enemy. If they show their anger to somebody we don't like, that guy's smart. You know? Because he sees that, you know, that third party is a real jerk and he's going to be on my side. So it's totally arbitrary. You know, completely arbitrary. So this can be really rather shocking, don't you think, when you think about it? You know, and you look at your relationships and why you feel the way you do about different people. Mm-hmm. And just to watch our reactions towards people. You know, watch at work if somebody comes in and criticizes your colleague. And that person says, or that person says the same words but looks at you. You're going to feel two different ways, aren't they? They criticize your colleague. I'm staying out of it. None of my business. My colleague gets bummed out. Don't worry about it because, you know, the boss is in a bad mood. The boss says that to me. Boy, how dare he, you know? It's the same words. We react totally different whether it involves me or doesn't involve me. You know, there's a water shortage in the city. Well, Tafloy around the world, it's not a big problem. It's too bad those people don't have water, but, you know, they can wait a few weeks. How would you feel, you know, you don't have water when you go to the tap and you turn the water on and nothing comes out? Are you going to sit, patiently while the government figures out what it's trying to do? Yeah? Are you going to welcome with open arms the people who, you know, who turned your water off? So, you know, I think when we, you know, do a little bit of analysis here about our emotions, we really see how subjective they are, you know, and how they really don't have much of a valid basis. Okay, some questions and comments? Yeah?
I have a question about how you decide that you like somebody. I understand that a lot of it is related to how they treat me. But also, are you attracted to people when you see how they treat others and that they make what you consider, you know, this somebody that you are attracted to is generous and they treat the waitress nice and they are honest. You can see that they, you look at how they treat others in general, that isn't always connected to them trying to have a relationship with them.
Yeah.
So how does equanimity fall in? Or you, and the opposite, you see somebody is cruel to an animal. That's not me they're being cruel to, but still, I think that's despicable on the mind.
Yeah. Okay. So you're asking, well, what about how this person treats other people, and we evaluate them how they treat other people, not just according to ourselves. So, you know, they help an animal or they harm an animal. You know, you think harming the animal is despicable, yeah? But other people think that harming that animal might be good, you know? I remember a time when somebody was, killing the fleas on their cat, and I was a bit alarmed about that, and that person got very mad at me because I was caring about the fleas on the cat. How dare you care about fleas on the cat? You know, that cat's harming, I mean, that those fleas are harming our cat. So, you know, it also, you know, if we look sometimes, it also relates to what we value as important. Yeah, you look at any government policy and you know, some people could say, well, I mean, look, the U.S. government is so magnanimous, you know, it's going out to liberate these people who were under this horrible dictatorship. You know, the U.S. government's filled with love and compassion and care and consideration and wanting to liberate these people, and they're so much better off now than they were before. And some people see it like that. Okay? Now, other people don't see it like that. It depends on which side you're standing on, you know, and what you're looking at. You look at one person who helps somebody else. You know, sometimes if they give money to somebody who you don't think is deserving of that money, you think less of them. So it's not just their generosity, it's who their generosity is directed towards. Okay? And same way, sometimes if they're aggressive towards somebody who you think that, you know, they need to be aggressive towards, you support them. But if they're aggressive towards somebody who you don't think needs to be aggressive towards, then you think that aggressive, you know, that same behavior, instead of, you know, it becomes something that you don't like. Okay? So, you know, different behaviors, you know, we can label one behavior assertive or aggressive, depending upon if it's related to somebody that we favor or we don't favor. Okay, and we can label something generous depending upon if the gift is given towards somebody we favor or don't favor. Yeah. So many things like this, you know, it often comes back to our values, you know, and how we think. I mean, definitely being generous, in, you know, on the whole is something that is a quality you want to look for in other people. But we also need to be careful because, you know, somebody's generous to my parents, to my family, to my children, to the causes that I think are good. But if they're generous, you know, to the NRA, I don't see that as generosity anymore. Yeah, I have a different value, and, you know, I don't want them to be generous.
So the purpose of equanimity, somehow you have to look at your own values in a new light.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can still have our own values. Yeah, we can still prefer that money not go to the NRA. We can still value, you know, keeping animals safe. But what I'm getting at is instead of thinking that the person who acts one way or another in the situation is inherently good or inherently flawed, you know, we are able to step back and see some people have some good qualities and some people have some bad qualities. And it may be a pity that this person's generosity is going towards a terrorist organization. You know, we don't want that. But we don't just label this other person as evil and throw them in the garbage. Okay, we see that they're misdirected. We see, you know, that they don't understand really what generosity is about. But, you know, we don't just give them a label and ignore them after that. Hmm? Yeah?
So there's somebody who has realized emptiness and somebody who doesn't label.
No, I think somebody who's realized emptiness, there's still labels because things exist by being merely labeled. But that person understands that things exist by being merely labeled. They don't see it as, you know, an inherent quality. For example, you know, in the world situation, I'm sure the Dalai Lama sees, you know, the Beijing government as, you know, somebody in opposition. Because conventionally, you know, that government is in opposition to the freedom of Tibet. Yeah. Does His Holiness hate the people in the Beijing government? No. You know, and he's constantly telling the Tibetans not to have animosity towards them. Okay?
So, if we're seeing people as an enemy or a stranger,
mm-hmm.
And he's realized emptiness is just...
Person. Yeah, I mean, they still see that they're closer to some people than to others in this life with all the, you know, what's going on. But they also have the bigger picture, you know. I mean, somebody who's realized emptiness, maybe they have students that they see every day who they're closer to than somebody who lives on the opposite side of the world, okay? So they relate differently to those students and they take care of them. You know, in a way that they don't do. But they also don't just say, oh, these students are so wonderful, they're the best ones in the world because they're mine, and everybody else is ridiculous. Okay? So the person who realizes emptiness just sees that things exist conventionally in this way, but that's not their ultimate mode of existence. Yeah? I mean, regarding this, there was an incident I noticed. And I bring up student-teacher relationships because sometimes people's emotions can get very flared with that, you know, because all of our authority issues and, you know, all sorts of stuff comes up. But I was with the incarnation of my teacher, Sekhar Rinpoche, in India, and he had one other sponsor who, you know, comes sometime to help. And this sponsor, in my opinion, sometimes acts in ways that are really inappropriate. Okay, and he called one day, and his house was all full, and this guy says, "I'm coming tonight. You know, me and my girlfriend are coming tonight. We want to stay X number of days." And You know, and Rinpoche says, sure. And I'm going, what? You know, why don't you tell him to go stay somewhere else? He can't call the last moment. It's so inconvenient on everybody in your household, the cook and everything like this. You know, this guy's always doing this. And I mean, I was nicer the way I said it. But, you know, in my mind, I was like, And anyway, Rinpoche just said, it's okay. You know, so this guy came with his wife and they stayed all these days and, you know, everybody was squished in, and you know, and it didn't influence me so much as it influenced other people in the household who had to do more work, and I just noticed Rinpoche treated these people so well, you know. I mean, he was just nice to them, he was sweet to them, he didn't get all bent out of shape, and you know, and I realized, wow, this really shows to me his spiritual development, because if he can treat somebody who acts like this in a very kind way, then even when I'm obnoxious, he'll treat me in a kind way too. You know, so instead of being jealous of, you know, how come this guy's so obnoxious and how come he's being so nice to this guy, he's so obnoxious and not nice to me because I'm better, you know, it was just, woo, I'm really glad he has this kind of equanimity, because this will spread to everybody that he comes in contact with. Yeah? And I really saw that his way of treating the situation actually prevented a lot of bad feelings from coming up. You know? And my way of treating it would have stirred up a lot of bad feelings. So it's actually very good I kept my mouth shut. And his example made me, you know, kind of extend myself and try and be nice to these people.
Did they pull their weight, though? The people, when they came, were they generous with their time?
You mean the people who called up? And
or were they a burden in the world?
You know, I think they were, you know, some of the monks in one room had to move out, you know, into the room outside to make room for them to come, and you know, they had to do two shifts of cooking for the visitors instead of one shift, you know, so it was inconvenient. Yeah, but people handled it so well, and that, you know, the people who were cooking and cleaning, they didn't complain. I mean, me, who wasn't cooking and cleaning, was the one who was saying, what's going on? But the people who had actually trained and subdued their minds and were, you know, happy to do the work without getting bent out of shape, they were okay with it. Yeah.
Just have a comment on, I was listening yesterday to a lecture from Dalai Lama he gave in Australia, and somebody asked him precisely this question, how do you feel about Beijing government? And, you know, he has really good sense of humor, so he said, you know, they're just uninvited guests. They just don't know yet.
Yeah. an uninvited guest, but they don't know yet. Beijing government. Yeah.
The exercise we did where we envisioned the person that we care for and the person that we dislike and then the person that we were apathetic on. The first one, obvious. The third one, I don't understand. What was the intent?
Okay, so you don't understand the part of the exercise. We're thinking about somebody that we feel apathetic towards. What was the purpose of that? Well, for example, when we were born, everybody was a stranger, and we were kind of apathetic towards everybody, weren't we? We didn't really care much about anybody. When some people started to help us, we labeled them friends and got attached. When other people started to not give us what we wanted, we labeled them enemies and developed hostility. But they all started out the same. And when they're the same in being strangers, we don't care much for them, do we? You know, I mean, some guy who's walking down the street outside right now, you know, nobody thinks about him very much. But if you notice that he parked in front of you and you can't get out, then, you know, it's influencing me and you would begin to have some thoughts about this person. Okay? Or if he stops and lets you pull out in front of him, you begin to have other thoughts. Okay? So it's a thing of noticing how sometimes we tune people out because they don't affect us one way or another. Yeah? And yet everybody has feelings, don't they? Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be free of suffering. You know, we're all exactly the same in that way. If we look over a long period of time, including previous lives, everybody's helped us in some way. Even in this life, everybody's helped us in some way. That guy who's the stranger who we ignore, you know, could be the trash collector who is actually very important in our life. Because if the trash collectors go on strike, we have big problems, and they're very kind to collect our trash. Okay? So, you know, it's recognizing that everybody has feelings and everybody contributes in one way or another. Okay?
So in reality, we shouldn't be apathetic to anyone.
Yeah. I mean, what we're aiming for in this meditation is to have an open-hearted concern for everybody. You know, a feeling of being able to value and be concerned about every living being instead of just tuning out most of them. Hmm? Okay? So this is actually, you know, quite a nice exercise to do. You know, when we get, next week we'll start into the 7 points of cause and effect, and, you know, we start contemplating how beings have been our relatives in the past and how they've been kind. You know, so to train our mind, you know, just to see, oh, there's all these kind people around who've been related. It to us, it transforms our attitude, you know, because, you know, first of all, feeling apathetic isn't very realistic. Second of all, it's not very pleasant, is it? You know, when you're just like, you know, you don't care about anybody. It's, you know, it's kind of a miserable state of mind for ourselves to be in.
The thing I think about in relationship to this question is, again, the difference. Someone asked last week the difference between taking action and not taking action and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it can get very confusing for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm making a judgment about somebody because of the way they're treating somebody, shouldn't I be, you know, showing something, or should I not be showing something?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's one time in my life that comes up and it still confuses me.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I was in the field again in Brazil, and I was faced with lots of violence on one hand and a German camera crew trying to record violence and another woman trying to do kindness, and I'm being dragged through a field by somebody I'm terrified of, who ends up being a street kid assigned base trying to help me. You know, and the world doesn't make sense in the context of everyday life. And in that moment I had something that I haven't been able to really just really connect to,
mm-hmm.
but it was as if I had just left my being,
mm-hmm.
and saw the world as this huge cauldron filled with muck and horror and beauty, and all along the side of the cauldron everybody was jumping in, and some people were crawling out, and some were going, ugh, you know, and others were saying, what was that? And then others saying, I don't know, but I want more. And it was at that moment that I realized,
yeah,
there was something exquisitely beautiful about every event that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't judge the camera crew, and I couldn't judge the kid, and I couldn't judge the woman trying to do good, and I couldn't judge myself. But I couldn't make sense out of it, but I knew it was extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where I stayed. I don't, and yet,
mm-hmm.
everyday life doesn't usually give me that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I struggle to go, it's almost like people who've had a near-death experience.
Uh-huh.
You know, how do you,
yeah,
come back to this?
And, yeah,
all of the questions really remind me of my struggle every day to try to see without all of the deadening words. They're always there, and they're,
yeah,
right, you're right, it's always about me, you know?
Hmm. Okay, so how am I going to summarize that? The mic does pick it up? Great. Okay, good. I'm glad the mic picks it up. But basically, I mean, what you're saying is you had an experience that was fairly chaotic, but what you found is you were able to step back and have the big picture of what was going on and stop your immediate reactions to everybody's immediate role in that situation and see that in some way, you know, everybody's wanting happiness, everybody's wanting suffering. People are, you know, pushed by their own causes and conditions to play whatever role or to do whatever they're doing in a situation, but it's not really who they are. Yeah? And that these things change all the time. You know, the person who you think is harming you, if you look at it differently, they're helping you. Or, you know, even if you don't look at it differently, 5 minutes later, they are helping you. You know, and the person you think who is helping you, you find out later was trying to harm you. Or even they were helping you at that moment, their motivation changes and they do, you know. Somebody gives us $1,000 today and they're our friend and they steal our stuff tomorrow and they become an enemy. You know, and so the idea is when we step back from all of this and we're, you know, we have a bigger picture, we see there's no use getting so bent out of shape and so involved with these temporary actions and roles that people are in for that period of time. Yeah, and we begin to see that they're all suffering in one way or another, aren't they? You know, whether they're the German camera crew who comes from a wealthy country and, you know, they're still involved in suffering, just as the, you know, the street kid in Brazil was involved in suffering. And that, you know, it's this ability to have a bigger mind about the bigger picture that enables us to generate actual compassion for people. Because we begin to see that, you know, everybody's under the influence of their own ignorance, anger, and attachment. So at one particular moment, they're acting one particular way, but, you know, from their side, they're still tangled up in all these turbulent emotions. They're not free. And so have compassion. Is that...
It was just, yes, yeah, and I think about it all the time, and I to find those places of the bigger picture, the more comprehensive connection to all life.
Yeah.
I did feel at that moment after that event, which was sort of timeless,
mm-hmm.
I was very rooted and connected to all life.
Yeah.
And it was an extraordinary feeling, but I you know, it doesn't stay.
Right. And I think that's what these meditations do, is they help us learn how to cultivate that feeling.
You know, I had at that time, I had the ability to hear you speak or to be with others who could help guide that.
Mm-hmm.
That experience for me, I could turn that experience into something as a practice. Or something.
Yeah, but you still can. I mean, any experience that we have, it's not permanent. You know, and you can't try and make yourself recapture something that you experienced. But just even knowing that having that kind of view on the world is possible gives you some perspective that, oh, if I cultivate the causes, then I can have that kind of way of viewing things more, you know, more steadily in my mind. I won't get derailed so easily.
So is that sort of like, do you get glimpses into emptiness, you know, in those kinds of circumstances or in the practice as you mature in your practice, you know, it's sort of like, does it all come at once? Do you all of a sudden, like, realize emptiness? Or do you just, like, gradually, like, learning to talk, you know, like, incrementally?
Most things happen gradually, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, the question was, do we, you know, kind of all of a sudden, wham, bang, realize emptiness or get little glimpses? I think you kind of get little glimpses and then at a certain point something really goes woo. So, you know, there's this whole debate in Buddhism. There's the gradual school and the sudden enlightenment school, you know, and some people say you realize emptiness, wham, bang, and others say, no, it's gradual. Well, the way His Holiness explains it is, you know, there might be a certain point on the path where it looks like, whoa, you know, you got it, but you get that because you've spent eons cultivating the causes beforehand, okay? You know, so it's like anything in our life. There might be, you know, there's one moment where the water boils. But if you never started heating up the water before, there's never going to be that moment that the water boils.
Good analogy.
Okay, last question.
And real quickly, would you please repeat the two ways to develop bodhicitta?
Oh, okay. One is the seven-point instruction of cause and effect, And the other one is equalizing and exchanging self and others.
Equalizing
and exchanging self and others. Okay? So we'll begin next week with the 7 points of cause and effect. If you want a good reading source for this, Geshe Jampa Tekchok's book called Transforming the Heart, The Buddhist Path to Joy and Courage, or The Buddhist Way to Joy and Courage. It's published by Snow Lion. Transforming the Heart, it's excellent. Yeah, he has really good descriptions in there. Okay, let's sit quietly. Remember what we've been talking about, and then we'll dedicate.